Imagine spending $1 million on a state-of-the-art AI supercomputer. You plug it in, turn it on, and then you realize that this incredibly expensive brain inside of it spends up to like 95% of its time doing absolutely nothing.
Right, it's just sitting there, idling, waiting.
Exactly, just waiting. And today, we're taking you inside the actual physical realities of the machines that power the AI you use every single day. But we're doing it through a very specific, somewhat counterintuitive lens. I'm your host, and joining me to unpack all of this is our resident tech expert. Welcome.
Thanks. I am super excited about this one because we're looking at research from a financial underwriter over at Compute Labs.
Yeah, which is a totally different vibe,
Right.
right? Because we're not talking to a software engineer or, an AI philosopher.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Which completely shifts the perspective. I mean, usually when we talk about artificial intelligence, we're analyzing algorithms or parameter counts or some crazy new software breakthrough. But an underwriter looks at physical model, silicon, and most importantly, risk. Their entire job is to finance these massive GPU clusters and build giant data centers. So they evaluate two really ruthless metrics. First, what is the residual value of this hardware in 5 years? And second, what is the supply chain risk of building it today?
Okay, let's unpack this. Because when this financier started looking at the actual bill of materials, like the literal receipt for these $1 million servers, they had this massive aha moment.
The total shock, honestly.
Yeah. Because for decades, the crown jewel of any computer build was always the processor. The logic die memory was just it was just a commodity. You checked the spot market price, bought some cheap chips, and slapped them on the motherboard. But they discovered that AI has entirely inverted that reality.
It really has. I mean, the constraint on building cutting-edge AI systems in 2024 and 2025 actually had very little to do with fabricating enough logic chips. Like, the factories could print the processors just fine.
Right.
The bottleneck was sourcing enough high bandwidth memory, or HBM. If this underwriter couldn't secure HBM, the entire data center project just halts. The server cannot be built.
Wait, okay, I'm already losing the thread here. Because if compute, like the raw processing power, the floating point operations per second, those FLOPS, if that's the root of machine intelligence, why is a finance person losing sleep over the memory supply chain?
That's a great question.
I mean, if I buy a chip that can do a trillion math operations a second, shouldn't that be the most valuable part of the box?
Well, the logic die is doing the math, yeah. But it cannot do math on data it doesn't have.
Oh.
So if the bottleneck shifts from the processor's ability to crunch numbers to the memory's ability to feed it data, your raw processing power becomes financially irrelevant.
That makes sense.
You paid a massive premium for a trillion operations a second, but you're only actually executing a tiny fraction of that because the processor is constantly just, well, it's just waiting for the next batch of numbers to
So
arrive.
feeling its thumbs.
Exactly. The biggest tech companies in the world aren't just fighting over processor design anymore. The real war is over the physical supply of the memory that sits directly next to those processors.
So if memory is the bottleneck throttling these billion-dollar companies, the natural assumption, at least for me, is just throw more memory at the problem, like build bigger memory banks, use different materials, just flood the system with memory.
You would think so.
Yeah.
But memory in computing is this rigid pyramid dictated by actual physics. You're always navigating three fundamental trade-offs:
Yeah.
speed, capacity, and cost per bit.
And you can't have all three, right?
Right, that is the golden rule of computing architecture. You cannot have all three. You can have incredibly fast memory that's dirt cheap, but it will hold almost zero data.
Okay.
Or you can have massive capacity that is cheap, but it's going to be agonizingly slow.
And the reason you can't have all three is simply distance. I mean, we're talking about the speed of light here. It's a hard physical limit. Electrical signals travel through copper or silicon at what, roughly a few centimeters per nanosecond?
Yeah, how about that? It's fast, but it's not instantaneous.
Yeah. Right. So if an AI processor operates at a clock speed of 3 gigahertz, a single cycle is a third of a nanosecond. In that tiny window, the electrical signal barely travels an inch.
Which is wild to think about.
It is. If the data is sitting on a memory chip just 2 inches away, the processor literally has to sit idle for multiple clock cycles, just waiting for the signal to arrive.
And that physical reality forces engineers into some very expensive decisions. To be fast, the memory physically must be microscopic, and it has to be placed right next to the processor.
Real estate is everything.
Exactly. Real estate on the processor package is the most highly contested space in the entire machine because it has to be small, And because it has to be fast, the manufacturing process is just brutal.
Let me try to ground this for you with an analogy. Think about it like a commercial kitchen, but on a massive scale. So the AI processor is this world-class chef. But this chef has like 10,000 arms and can chop vegetables at lightning speed.
I love this analogy.
Thanks. So the fastest memory, which is known as SRAM, is the cutting board directly in front of the chef. They can reach it instantly, right? But it's tiny. You can only fit maybe one carrot on it at a time. It uses 6 microscopic transistors just to hold a single bit of data so it can switch on and off instantly without waiting for a capacitor to charge.
Yeah, the cutting board analogy works perfectly for SRAM. But because an AI model is dealing with hundreds of billions of parameters, that tiny cutting board is woefully insufficient. The chef needs way more data.
Right.
Which leads us to the next layer of the pyramid, high bandwidth memory, or HBM. In your kitchen analogy, this would be the kitchen counter directly behind the chef.
Okay, so it holds significantly more data than the cutting board, and it's still relatively close.
Exactly. But constructing that counter space is an engineering nightmare.
Because they aren't just laying memory chips flat next to the processor, right?
Okay.
The underwriter's research notes that to save lateral space, because again, distance is the enemy, they're stacking the memory vertically.
Yes. They take microscopic layers of DRAM, which is your standard denser memory that only uses one transistor and one capacitor per bit, and they stack them like a microscopic skyscraper.
A microscopic skyscraper.
Right. But to connect all those layers so the data can flow down to the processor, they have to drill thousands of microscopic holes vertically through the silicon chips.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, these are called through-silicon vias, or TSVs.
Drilling holes through something as fragile as silicon, I mean, that sounds like a great way to break a lot of really expensive chips.
It absolutely is. It is a low-yield, highly volatile manufacturing process. You are aligning thousands of microscopic copper pillars across multiple extremely fragile wafers.
And if you're off by even a tiny bit.
If the alignment is off by a fraction of a hair, or if the thermal expansion during the process cracks a layer, the entire stack just goes straight in the trash.
Oops.
That is exactly why HBM costs $10 to $20 or more per gigabyte, while a standard solid-state drive you might, plug into your laptop costs pennies per gigabyte.
And going back to the kitchen, if you rely on system DRAM, which is like the refrigerator clear across the room, or a storage drive like the SSD, the chef has to stop chopping, walk across the kitchen, open the door, grab the food, and walk back.
Which is agonizingly slow.
In computing terms, that takes tens to hundreds of nanoseconds. The processor would spend its entire life just waiting.
Right.
Which actually brings up a really interesting historical dimension to this financier's research, this tension between fast processors and slow memory. It isn't an AI-specific phenomenon. We've actually been staring down this cliff for 3 decades.
Yeah, the warning flags went up back in 1995. 2 computer architects, William A. Wolfe and Sally A. McKee, published a paper outlining a concept they called hitting the memory wall.
Hitting the memory wall.
Right. They observed this stark arithmetic divergence.
Yeah.
Processor speeds were scaling exponentially, but memory access speeds were barely creeping forward.
The numbers in the report are just staggering. Over the 2 decades following that paper, raw compute throughput, so the speed at which processors can do mass scale by a factor of roughly 60,000.
60,000?
Yeah. But the bandwidth of standard DRAM improved by only about 100 times. The actual latency, the physical time it takes to fetch a single piece of data, essentially flatlined. The gap didn't just widen, it became a canyon.
Which naturally raises the question, if this massive canyon opened up over the last 30 years, why didn't the whole tech industry just collapse?
Mm.
I mean, how did laptops and servers keep feeling faster every single year if the memory couldn't keep up?
Well, because we cheated, or I guess more accurately, we used incredibly clever software engineering to pave over the canyon.
We absolutely did.
The entire industry relied on things like massive caches, prefetching, and branch prediction. Essentially, the software tries to guess what data the processor will need next, and it fetches it from the slow memory into the fast SRAM before the processor even asks for it.
What's fascinating here is that it was a massive collective bet placed by the global software industry. They built architectures under the assumption that computer programs are predictable.
And for 30 years, they were basically right.
They were. Traditional software, whether it's a spreadsheet, a video game, or a web server, reuses small sets of data in tight, repetitive loops. As long as your data access is predictable, those prefetching algorithms work flawlessly. You completely hide the latency of the slow memory because the data is already on the cutting board right when the processor needs it.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. artificial intelligence entirely dismantles that 30-year bet. AI doesn't run in predictable, tight little loops reusing the same small variables. Especially when it's generating text, it requires something completely different. It requires the whole library, constantly.
To understand why AI breaks this paradigm so badly, we have to look at the mechanics of a large language model generating a response. There are two distinct phases. The first is the pre-fill phase, where the AI reads the prompt you just typed in. The second is the decode phase, where it generates the answer, token by token.
And a token being a fragment of a word. So when you watch a chatbot type out its response, you're watching the decode phase in real time. It's not spitting out a pre-written essay. It is calculating the statistical probability of the very next word based on its training.
Yes. And this is the core technical revelation that the financial underwriter is obsessing over. It's a concept called arithmetic intensity.
Arithmetic intensity. Okay, break that down for us.
It is a critical metric that defines how efficiently a piece of hardware is being used. Basically, arithmetic intensity measures how many mathematical operations you perform for every single byte of data you fetch from memory.
So a high arithmetic intensity means you fetch a little bit of data, but do a ton of math on it.
Exactly. Think of the pre-fill phase, or when the AI is initially being trained on supercomputers. The system is doing massive matrix multiplications over huge batches of data. Mm. It pulls a chunk of data and just hammers it with thousands of calculations.
Right.
That is high arithmetic intensity. In that scenario, the processor actually is the bottleneck. The math units are running at maximum capacity. This is highly compute bound.
But the decode phase, like generating the actual answer for a user, is the exact opposite, isn't it?
Completely the opposite.
To figure out the next single word to type, the GPU has to pull the model's entire relevant weight set out of memory. It has to scan its massive multi-billion parameter neural network, drag all that data across the physical silicon bus into the processor, do a very tiny amount of math to pick the next word, and then throw all that data away.
Then, to get the word right after that, it has to read the entire weight set all over again, plus the new word it just generated.
That's insane.
It is. The arithmetic intensity of the decode phase is absolutely atrocious. For a single user interacting with a model, the GPU might only execute one or two mathematical operations for every byte of data it reads. For the processor to run efficiently and justify its crazy price tag, it wants to be doing hundreds of operations per byte.
Wait, if I'm the underwriter looking at this, I just financed a data center filled with NVIDIA H100 GPUs. The spec sheet says that chip can do 1,000 teraflop PS, that's a quadrillion floating point operations per second.
Yep.
But it's being fed by its high bandwidth memory at a maximum rate of roughly 3.35 terabytes per second. If it's only doing one or two math operations per byte fetched, those 1,000 teraflop PS are utterly useless during decode.
The math units just sit there, entirely starved for data. During a standard single-stream decode process, that incredibly expensive GPU might be running at single-digit percentages of its peak capacity.
Single digits?
Yeah. The rest of the silicon is just idling, waiting for the memory to hand it the next batch of weights.
The author of the research uses a fantastic analogy here. Imagine you just bought $1 million state-of-the-art sports car. That is your 1,000 teraflop PS processor. It has the engine to go 300 miles an hour.
A total beast of a machine.
Exactly. But you are forced to drive it on a single lane on-ramp with a strict 35 mile per hour speed limit. That speed limit is your 3.35 terabytes per second memory bandwidth.
And upgrading the sports car to an even faster model doesn't get you onto the highway any quicker. The only physical way to speed up the process is to widen the on-ramp. You need more memory bandwidth.
Oh, but if this is the reality of running AI, how on earth do chip manufacturers sell these processors for tens of thousands of dollars? Like when they do a keynote presentation, they show these massive charts where performance is doubling or tripling every generation. Are those charts just fiction?
Well, no, the charts are real, but they are based on a very specific context. The keynotes usually focus on training workloads and large batch processing. If you batch hundreds of user queries together and process them simultaneously, you can increase the arithmetic intensity as you're doing more math per byte fetched.
Oh, I see.
But batching creates latency. The user has to wait longer for the first word to actually appear on their screen.
And as the underwriter points out, a model is only trained once. I mean, it might take months, but it's a one-time massive compute expenditure. After that, the model spends the rest of its entire lifespan in production, serving answers to users billions of times in the decode phase.
Exactly. The benchmark that sells the chip is completely divorced from the workload that actually runs the asset day to day.
This creates a terrifying dynamic for someone assessing financial risk. If you underwrite a $50 million server cluster, assuming it will operate at maximum compute efficiency, but its actual day job is generating tokens at a terrible arithmetic intensity, your asset is fundamentally mispriced.
It really is. Its residual value isn't based on its teraflop piece anymore. It's based on how much high bandwidth memory is bolted to it.
So what does this all mean for the broader industry? If the veil has been lifted and everyone realizes memory bandwidth is the actual constraint, how is the money reacting to this physical reality?
Well, markets are ruthlessly efficient at seeking out the true bottleneck in any system, right? Value always pools around the scarcest resource. For decades, the logic die was the constraint, so the margins and the market caps went to the processor designers. But now, the value is aggressively shifting down the supply chain to whoever can manufacture and package high bandwidth memory.
The financial projections in the source material really put this in perspective. The HBM market was roughly $35 billion in 2024. By 2028, it is projected to hit $100 billion.
Yeah, massive.
That's a 40% compound annual growth rate. And it isn't just because we are building more data centers. The growth is being driven by three separate multipliers compounding on each other.
First, the sheer volume of memory required per chip is exploding. An NVIDIA H100 in 2022 had 80 gigabytes of HBM. The upcoming generation architectures are pushing toward 288 gigabytes per chip.
Wow.
Yeah, the physical footprint of memory on the package is expanding dramatically.
Second, the industry is deploying vastly more chips overall as AI integration becomes standard across enterprise software. Every company wants AI now.
Exactly. And third, because HBM requires those through silicon vias and that complex vertical stacking we talked about, the manufacturing yield is low, which drives the price per gigabyte straight through the roof.
So you have vastly more memory per chip on vastly more chips being deployed, all being sold at a heavily constrained premium price.
It perfectly captures why the financier had their aha moment. The entire tech press spent 10 years obsessing over who had the smartest processor architecture. But the multi-billion dollar question dictating the future of AI infrastructure is simply, who has the supply chain to feed the processor?
If you can't source the memory, your AI ambitions are dead in the water.
It genuinely frames our daily interaction with these tools in a completely new light. The underlying mechanics are far more physical than we realize. I mean, when you prompt a large language model and watch the text appear on your screen, you assume you're watching a supercomputer perform incredibly complex logical deductions.
But you're actually watching a memory retrieval operation. You're watching the hardware desperately trying to drag gigabytes of weights across a microscopic silicon bridge just to figure out the next syllable.
The delay you experience isn't the machine thinking. It's the physical limit of how fast human engineering can blast electrical signals across a tiny physical distance without melting the components. You're hitting the physical boundaries of the material world, not a software limitation.
Which leaves us with a fascinating final thought for you to explore on your own. If the speed of AI is entirely bottlenecked by the physics of distance, and fast memory physically must be located on the microscopic real estate right next to the processor, what happens when we literally run out of room? We can drill holes in silicon and stack it vertically, but eventually heat and physics cap how high that skyscraper can go. We cannot alter the speed of light. So will this seemingly unstoppable digital revolution eventually hit a hard physical wall in the material world that no amount of money or software engineering can break through? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the physical realities hiding behind your digital world, and we will catch you next time.